Hey everyone, my name is Andrew Warner, and I'm someone who hates being late. And I'm 25 minutes late to start this interview. And the reason for that is, I want to make sure that my interviews aren't just me hanging out here with a guest saying, hey, I don't know anything about you, you tell me, and the audience and I will both learn together. I want to do some research. I want to make sure that I'm not missing something, that no one's using my interview as a way to gain popularity for something that is underneath the surface, a scam. And so, Justin Cook, my guest, I'll tell you as I tell the audience, I spent 25 minutes talking to people about you who are in your industry to make sure that this wasn't like that you're not just a nice guy who happens to have been a long-term Mixergy listener who now is going to get to take advantage of me. And I've got some stuff. And I've told you before that I have some things and I wanted to talk to you about them. Nothing specially shocking, but I wanted to make sure that there wasn't anything underneath that would mean that you shouldn't really be on Mixergy.
Totally fair.
Good. And I should introduce you. You're Justin Cook. You're the founder of Empire Flippers. Empire Flippers is a website where people go and buy and sell websites. In fact, if anyone is listening to me right now, they can go to empireflippers.com and just browse through a list of websites that are available for sale, what their revenues are, what they do, etc. And then, of course, they could buy those sites. This interview is going to be about how Empire Flippers came to be, what Justin and his co-founder did before, how they failed and had to close up a company, where they came up with this idea, why a marketplace actually works, etc. And this whole interview is sponsored by two great companies. The first company will help you close more sales. It's done that for me for years. I urge you to check out Pipe Drive. The second one will help you hire great developers, designers, and even finance people. I'll tell you more about them later. They're called Top Tal. First, I got to jump into this interview. Justin, hey.
Hey.
All right. The big thing that legitimized you for me was that you were in the Inc. 500 list, right? Yeah. What was the revenue that you guys listed with Inc. for 2015?
So in 2012, we did right around $200,000 in total volume, total sales. And then we did right around 4.7 in 2015.
Now, 4.7 for Inc. means revenue. But that's not really your revenue, is it?
Well, it depends on how you count revenue. Right. Okay. So if you look at our QuickBooks and our profit and loss and everything, we count that as revenue, as top line. It's kind of viewed, or we view it as kind of like an e-commerce company. So like we're selling products, right? So we view our websites as product sales.
Except you're not buying the website and then selling it. The 4.7 million includes the price of the website that was listed on your site.
Yep, that's
right. But totally you didn't buy it and then resell it. What you did was you acted as a marketplace, as a way to help facilitate a sale. The money kind of passed through you because it's something that's interesting that you guys do, but you don't keep that money. It's not your real revenue, is it?
No. In fact, we keep a much smaller percentage of that. So that's top line. All of the transactions we've done, we keep a much, much smaller percentage of that.
Okay. So 4.7 is the total deal sale and what you guys collect.
That's right.
Bottom line, excluding the value of the sites that are sold and bought on your site, what's the revenue?
Probably, we're probably about 15%. So we did maybe 700,000 total, like, and we probably had expenses of around, not counting our pay, maybe 500. So okay. I think we were about break even in 2015 in terms of our expenses. So not counting Joe and I's pay, which was maybe 100,000 each.
Got it. Okay. I heard there was a controversy with YEC where they only accept people in if they have a million in revenue.
Yeah.
You guys got accepted in. Oh, I can see that,
Talk to me about that.
What happened there?
So it's horrible. So we were dealing with YEC, which I thought was a great company, a great place to be. And, I had had some conversations with them. And they said, well, where are you located? And I said, well, I'm located overseas. And they said, well, but this is for Americans. I said, no, I'm an American. I'm living abroad. But, I am an American. I have an American company, American LLC. So they had some issue with that. So then they came back to us and they said, well, I need to understand, like, exactly what I don't understand. It doesn't look like it's actual revenue that you're bringing in. That doesn't look like the right dollar amounts. And I said, well, you can talk to our accountant. I mean, this is the way that we track, the books. This is the way we've done it for years. And they went back and they said, well, okay, that's fine. No problem. And they came back and said, no, you can't be a part of YEC. So it was a bit of a bummer. I was pretty bummed about it, actually. It was really disappointing. So I don't understand what why that was an issue for them. I don't understand, you know, where they were coming from, but you know, it's their decision, their company. They can choose who they want to have on and who they don't.
Part of the challenge is the way you guys handle escrow, that if you were Americans living in America, running an American company, you couldn't operate this way. And by the way, for the audience who's listening, I'm not beating up on Justin. Before the interview started, I said, hey, Justin, do you want me to tip you off about where we're going? Do you want me to go a little bit lighter and build up to it? Or are you comfortable with me just addressing the big, tough issues up front? Because that's the way I'd like to do it. And Justin said, you know what? I'd love it if you just went honest with me. And I know yeah. the way you operate, Justin. I've done a lot of reading about you. So it's not like I'm kicking a puppy here. I'm no. in the ring. We're talking. We're really understanding this business. And I wouldn't have you on if I didn't respect what you built up. But the issue is
yeah.
the way you handle escrow. Most of your competitors handle escrow by saying, look, you want to buy on my site? You have to pay up front before we transfer the site to you, right? If you want to buy a website off of my service, you have to pay up front and you put the money in an escrow service once the website is transferred and everything's handled. Then the escrow gets released and the money goes to the seller. You guys do something different. What do you guys do with it?
Yeah, so one of the problems with using just a third-party escrow service, especially one that doesn't understand the transferring of online businesses, it's problematic because they don't know how it works. So whenever there's a dispute or if there is a dispute, it may be very difficult for them to moderate. In fact, many of the companies don't do that. They send you to an arbitrator who has very little understanding of online businesses. So what we do generally, and this is for like, I'd say five-figure, maybe low six-figure sales, is we'll handle that for you. And we don't act as escrow. We simply facilitate the transaction. So the buyer pays us. We make sure the site is transferred to the buyer from the seller. They verify that. We verify it with them, and then we pay out the seller directly. So we do that for most of the smaller transactions. But the larger transactions, we do actually use escrow. We just don't use an escrow company. We use attorneys. So generally, attorneys are bonded, and they're able to act as escrow for those larger deals. And when, especially if it's like a new customer for us, and they're a little uncomfortable with us doing the transaction for them, we will go through an attorney, generally our attorney, but we're willing to use other attorneys as well.
But doesn't that create a problem where you in the past have said, hey, you know what? This deal went through, but we don't think it actually should have gone through. We want to take the money back and transfer it to the seller and take the money back, give it to the buyer, take the website back, give it to the seller. And a seller who thought he had a deal suddenly is back with his website after having completed the deal. But no
yeah,
money.
That can happen. It's really rare. So I'd say, I mean, we have just any kind of problem, like issue with the deals we do, probably less than 5%. So 1 in 20. And actually reversing the deal is even less than that. But it does happen. It often happens in situations where there's an issue, right? Something wasn't disclosed. The earnings for the buyer aren't matching what the seller stated, or there was some material issue in the deal. So when deals do get reversed at that point, it's very clear. And oftentimes the sellers are either okay with it or understanding of it because of what happened. They know what's going on. They see what's going on with the earnings, with the site. So it's not necessarily a problem. And when it is a problem, it's, you know, generally should have been reversed because it wasn't a fair deal to begin with. And I think that a lot of, like, if you're using an escrow company, a third-party escrow company with an arbitrator that doesn't understand the transfer on online businesses, I think it's much more risky than dealing with people who understand the deal. Do you know what I mean?
I do. And I guess what it comes down to is you guys saying, look, we get it better. You have to trust us. And
yeah.
the reason people
yeah.
trust you is the same reason why I felt comfortable hitting you with the tough questions. You guys blog very openly about how you do your business. You're out there as podcasters. You're talking to people all the time. And before they even list on their site, chances are good that they've gotten to know you as personalities. They've gotten to see photos of where you are and know how you're traveling, et cetera.
Yeah, that helps when people understand our business, right? If they get to know us or get a feel for kind of the way we do business, they're going to approach us in a way that works for us, right? They're going to come at us in a way that we know and understand. It makes it a lot easier to do business.
But you guys are different. Like usually the marketplaces, especially when it comes to something like this, where you're essentially kind of brokering businesses, people have to be not just on the up and up, but have to be super clean. Meanwhile, you guys are much more personality driven, much more aggressive, much more. I think the best way to explain it than to come up with another adjective is to talk about the Russian syndicate scammed us post that you guys did. You know what
well,
I'm talking about?
I do. But it's interesting to say you say you're either clean or you guys are very personality driven. So you're making it like it's one
or the
other.
Sorry, I shouldn't have said clean. I mean, suits and ties.
Yeah. Yeah.
Versus, hey, we're real guys here. Here are the photos of how we're doing business.
Yeah, Hawaiian shirts. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. That's. I think maybe I shouldn't have said clean, as in like you guys do dirty business.
We're dirty. I mean, we're on the dirty side.
No, no, that's not. Yeah, that's definitely not what I'm trying to say. And frankly, if you were that, then I just wouldn't have you on. I mean, it's just different way of doing business in an industry where people are much more proper, much more buttoned down, much more. We need escrow, so we'll get escrow and so on.
Let's fill out these 50 pages of contracts and yeah.
Right, that's another thing. You guys don't do contracts with people.
Well, that's not true. I don't know where you got this information, Andrew. We do contracts. So we've done quite a few contracts. And generally for the larger deals, we don't do contracts usually on smaller deals. So let's say it's a $50,000 Amazon affiliate site. We won't do a contract in that case because it just doesn't make a lot of sense. If you have an American in Hong Kong selling their business to an Australian national in New Zealand – like, okay, so you do a contract. Where are you going to go after them for this $50,000? Like, it doesn't make a lot of sense. Clarity makes sense. And being clear on the deal does, but not necessarily a contract. Now, when it comes to, you know, an $800,000 transaction, $600,000 transaction, generally there's contracts in place, and we help facilitate that with attorneys. So we do on the larger deals, but we don't do it on the small ones.
Let's go for one last tough question, then we'll understand how you got here. The last one, or last tough topic. The topic is this blog post you guys did about how a Russian syndicate scammed you for $25,000. And I saw a lot of people cheering you on because – can you describe what happened there?
Yeah. So for when we were starting off, we did a lot of PayPal transactions, credit card transactions. We allowed people to buy – and this is like much smaller sites, $5,000, $8,000, $12,000 websites from us. And they'd pay with credit card or PayPal. We knew this was problematic. Because it's easy to charge back. You can, you know, take the money back in PayPal. We knew that was a problem, but it hadn't become a problem until that point. And then we had someone that had a couple of guys out of Russia that had stolen women's credit cards in Canada. I don't know. It was like a bunch of women that did credit cards in Canada. For whatever reason, they got access to these credit cards. Started charging the sites, and then, you know, the women charged back, and you know, we lost about $25,000. And we realized that happened. We said, oh shit, this is bad. We need to button this up. So we, you know, immediately stopped credit card transactions, PayPal, and then kind of went after them, right? We went after them in the way that we knew how, and eventually decided to blog about it. And that wasn't an easy decision because, I mean, it makes us look bad, right? I mean, we didn't just get scammed. We allowed ourselves to get scammed, which is putting ourselves in an awkward position, and then talking about it publicly. As a company, you don't generally do that. And it was one of those things where like we shouldn't say this, or like we normally wouldn't. It's an uncomfortable thing to talk about. We said, look, let's just put it out there because the uncomfortable stuff is generally what's good. That's what resonates with people. So let's put the post out, and it was super popular. Not everyone liked where we were coming from. You said people were cheering us on somewhere, but some weren't.
Yeah, very polarizing. And part of the reason it was polarizing is you said, here are the photos of the two people who scammed us. Here is the ID of one of them, the actual official ID. The other one, I think, you linked to Instagram. And you said, these guys, we think, are scamming. And did you log into their Gmail account to find this stuff?
Joe did. Yeah.
Gmail account. And the way did it was they used the same username and password on one site as they did on their Gmail account. And you said, let's test it out. And you logged in. And that's how you got it. You even got like a picture of their credit card information.
Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm.
How do you feel about that now that you saw the controversy where people said, you can't do that? You can't
log
into it.
Not bad at all. I don't. I mean, I'd feel bad if it were a customer of ours or someone that we had a dispute with or something. I mean, that's clearly horrible. But that's not the case here. I mean, these were like absolute fraud, right? I mean, it was scammers. So, no, I don't feel bad about it, no. And, in fact, because of that post, we had someone reach out to us from Homeland Security or something like that, and said, look, one of the guys had a plan to go to the U.S. So he reached out to me and said, look, I have that picture. you know, don't mention my name in particular or whatever, but I'll look into this and make sure the guy isn't able to go to the U.S. because I guess he had a U.S. trip planned or something.
Yeah, you showed pictures of his paperwork to apply for a visa to come to the U.S.
Well, he showed it on Instagram, but yeah, for sure.
Unbelievable. And he took it, I think he took it down off of his Instagram account after that.
Did he? Yeah, I'm not sure. One of the things we took a hit over was, you know, people were saying, well, you, if he logged in with like a username and password on your site and you're not protecting that information, then that is horrible of you to not protect customers' passwords. That's not the case. We didn't actually have their password from a login on our site. We don't have a username.
How did you get his password then?
He had had a password for one of the sites that he wanted us to use that we were transferring to him. So that's
So he emailed you his password, said, hey, use this?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, wow. That is such bad password protection. Yeah. Has he reached out to you after you called him out?
No. What did happen, though, was surprisingly, right? I'm surprised that there wasn't anything at all. What we did, and we tried to reach out to him, couldn't get anything. We did, because of that post, and it was pretty popular, we got one of the guys that ended up with the site. He ended up buying it from the scammer at a discounted rate and then came back to us and said, oh, no, you guys, like, I think this might be involved. Can we check it out? Checked it out. It was one of the sites. Ended up selling it for him, giving him back the money he lost, and we recovered a bit of money on the deal. So I forget how much it was. It wasn't 25 grand, but it was a bit of money, and it was pretty crazy. So by actually doing that post, we got one of the people that bought the site from him, got that site back and resold it. So it's crazy.
See, this is what makes you guys
dirty.
So dirty? No, not
I know what you mean. I know what you mean. Yeah, different.
You know, I marvel when I listen to someone like Kara Swisher. She comes up with the perfect word to express what she's thinking, and I don't have that talent. What I have is the deep interest to understand how something works and how to use it to grow something else. And so many times in my interviews, I've used the wrong word, and I could see that it creates a flare up in my guest that sometimes causes them to shut down. And I'm glad that you didn't get shut down by that. But yeah. I get it. But this is what makes you guys so captivating to watch. You're unapologetic about it. You say, look, here's the way we work. If you trust us, we're going to do this, and we're going to be champions for you. If you don't trust us, we're not afraid to mention companies like Flippa. Go use them. And your content marketing strategy is what even your competitors have told me is the enviable part of your business. And part of the reason you can do it is because you live outside the U.S. In the U.S., before I get to ride a horse, I have to sign tons of paperwork. I go outside the U.S. to other countries. I get to just go freaking ride a horse. And so the reason you get to do this is if you were in America, maybe you'd be bigger targets.
I think that's wrong, Andrew. I think that's an interesting point. But I think that's an easy excuse for our competitors to use. Right. So like, oh, well, we're in the U.S. Oh, we have stricter regulations. It's just it's too tough for us to do that. We can't talk like that. We can't say that kind of thing. And I think that's exactly one of the reasons it is successful, is because people are fearful in our industry. It's a very fragmented industry. No one has like a clear market share, and everyone's secretive and not so upfront about what they're doing and what their business looks like. So the fact that we're willing to say, look, here's where we're at, here's what we do, this is how it works, you know, sorry. There are people in our industry that aren't fans of our process overall. I mean, we charge a deposit up front before you can see any sites. And there are industry people that won't do business with us. There are potential customers that won't.
What do you mean before I see? So I'm on your site right now. I get to click the view all listings. What I don't get to see is the actual names of the companies, but the rest I get to see.
That's right. So you won't get to see the niche. You won't get to see the actual URL. You can see any of that information without paying a deposit. So what that does is it keeps you – I mean, you have to pay – let's say it's a $100,000 online business for sale. You got to pay a $5,000 deposit. And so, you know, a lot of people are like, look, I'm not paying money up front. I absolutely refuse to do that. You might do that, and that's okay, and we would probably lose your business, and maybe you go to a competitor, but you probably wouldn't be a good fit for our business. And, you know, we lose a few legitimate potential buyers out of that, but the vetting it does for everyone else is completely worth it. And so, you know, it's something our competitors, other industry people were like, that is crazy. I can't believe they do that, but what they don't understand is we're happy to do something that works, and it works.
I see. So, for example, I clicked on shopping. I see a site that's selling for $928,000, roughly. That I just happened to click on it. It says that it's making $32,000 a month in net profit. If I click on make, if I want to see it, I have to make a deposit first of $9,900, about $10,000 just to see what the site is. And that's because you don't want looky-loos. You don't want everyone out there to see what's selling and what the sites are. You want to make sure that if I'm interested in the site, then I'm willing to at least trust you with $10,000, which I could get back if I don't buy it.
Absolutely, completely refundable. In fact, if you do end up buying it, we're going to refund you anyway and require a wire because of our previous credit card issues and PayPal issues. So we're not going to allow that. But that's problematic for us. But yeah, so we're going to require you to send the whole wire over anyway. So yeah, I mean, it just keeps you from reviewing the business. And a lot of times, you know, some businesses are maybe easily copyable. So a looky-loo where someone just scrolling through our listings could, you know, copy that business. So, some people think it's the seller we're protecting. It's not. We're protecting the buyer. Andrew, if you're going to buy that business, right, and you don't want to end up with like a dozen copycats. So we're ultimately protecting you, the end buyer. Now, with the deposit process, it doesn't protect everyone, but the kids in their parents' basements with no credit cards, it keeps them from trying to copy the business.
Which happens a lot. I've had interviewees on here who've talked exactly about how they built their business, and then they email me afterwards and say, Andrew, look, this guy just recreated my site. And now he's selling it, or this guy's trying to recreate my site. He's putting a request up for developers on this other site to do it. All right, let me take a moment here. I'm going to talk about one of my sponsors, and then we'll come back and talk about how you got here. We get into the nice questions that most people ask when they get to talk to someone for the first time instead of the, hey, why did you do this? All right, here's my first sponsor. My first sponsor is a company that, frankly, if anyone wanted to copy any one of my interviewees or any other site or build up their business, they can go to. It's a company called TopTal. Here's what TopTal does. They're a network of the best developers out there. Just phenomenal developers. They make it really hard to be part of their network. And if a company wants to hire from them, all they have to do is go to toptal.com/mixergy and just say, I need a developer who does WordPress development, Ruby on Rails developer, etc. And they'll introduce you to someone who fits not just your needs, but also the way you work. Let me ask you this. If you could build any website, you're a guy who's seen tons of websites built, Justin. If you had nothing but a great developer from TopTal, what website would you build that would make money quickly?
Marketplace to buy and sell online businesses.
No, that's a hard one to build. We'll get into how hard that is.
It is. I don't know. I mean,
what about one that takes a while to build?
All right, so here's one I really like, an industry and a niche. Yes. I think would be interesting, is one targeting seniors and retirement homes and really good, like high-quality content, easily able to navigate. I mean, a lot of baby boomers are retiring. I'd start in a place like Florida and have a really nice layout and great UI UX to be able to navigate through the site for the you know, people looking for retirement homes for their parents.
Oh, I see. Buy a retirement home for your parent. Here's a website where you can do that, and you want not just great developers on it, and frankly, it's not that expensive a site to build, but you do want really good design so that people who are older who want to go through it won't have to struggle. And that's one of the great things about TopTal. They have not just developers, but they also have designers. You hire the best of the best, you put them together, and you end up with a really good team of people. One of my listeners, by the way, a guy who runs a company called Tatango, actually had a business. It was up and running. It's the same stuff that you could do via email, you know, email marketing, but do it via text. That's his business. A lot of companies hire him. The guy's doing really well. He told me his revenues. I won't reveal it. But he said, look, I'm not starting out. I have a business. I have a real company here. I need more developers. He went to TopTal, hired a great developer, CTO caliber developer, hired him. Had such a good experience, he ended up hiring another 6 people to fill out his team. His team consists largely of TopTal developers. All right, anyone who's listening to me who's either starting out with an idea like the one that Justin just gave you or building up the way that Tatango did when they were listening to me, could just go to toptal.com/mixergy and hire a developer or a designer. Here's the way their process works. You go in there, you fill out a form, and then they get on the phone with you to understand your problem and match you up with a developer. If you love it, you get to go and work with them. If you don't, you don't have to. But if you use the special URL that I just gave you, you get 80 hours of TopTal developer credit when you pay for your first 80 hours. And that's in addition to a no-risk trial period of up to 2 weeks. It's a phenomenal offer made just to Mixergy people. To get it, go to toptal.com/mixergy. toptal.com Mixergy. Justin, let's get into how you got here. You're a guy, you were in college, you met your buddy Joe. Is that where you guys met up?
No, we met before that, but okay. We had talked for a bit, and he had, we'd hung out a bit.
And then the mortgage business got, well, you got into the mortgage business how, and what happened there?
So he was making some money working for a company selling mortgages, right? It's California, big market. Was making good money. I was in college at the time. I said, look, you know, come join this business. You can make some good money. I can get you in. And we went and did that for a while, working for someone else. He's a great sales guy, great sales organization, kind of learned the business, and eventually said, hey, why don't we do this on our own? I think we can do this.
And you guys decided you were going to start a mortgage brokerage business?
Yeah, we did. So we started a mortgage brokerage. We were still doing our own loans, originating our own loans, but also start bringing on people to do loans underneath us, and started giving them fairly large splits. Business was good, but shortly after that, not too long after that, we started seeing kind of the mortgage crisis early. So, like, lenders started like closing up their what they would allow to go through. So deals we had in the pipeline, we couldn't push through. We couldn't get them done anymore. And we saw it soon. It's funny looking back, like we were right in that, Andrew. And, mm-hmm. you know, if we'd had any way to capitalize on it, it would have been really interesting. But we didn't know.
Capitalize on the fact that the mortgage industry
was going to crash. Absolutely. And it was so clear, you know, we didn't, in hindsight, but like we were right in the middle of it. We saw it before anyone else did. Everyone else was on TV saying things are fantastic, and we weren't able to get loans closed. So
and the way that business worked is you would go and find people who needed mortgages, and they fill out the paperwork, and then you take it to banks and you get them. You say, look, here's one of my clients. Will you give them a loan? If the bank says no, then you go to another one. If they say no, then you go to another one. And when
banks would wine and dine you, actually, they would come in and take you out and please, do you have any loans you can give me? And then when that started drying up, we started going to them and saying, hey, will you take these loans?
Can
we
do this deal? Yeah. And so how did you get the clients? How did you get the people who are looking for mortgages?
So a bunch of different ways. I mean, through when we were working for a company, we had lead gen. When we had our own brokerage, we were doing some phone leads. We were paying a good bit, I think anywhere from 80 to 100 bucks per call, whether you close the deal or not. It's pretty pricey. But yeah, that was a whole nother business. You know, lead gen to mortgage companies at that time was just through the roof. There's a lot of Filipino call centers are making a ton of money on that. And that's actually when we originally kind of connected with the Philippines. We were hiring people, loan officers, and we were putting ads on Craigslist and trying to find people to close deals. And we didn't want to do that, so we hired a virtual assistant. This is like pre-Odesk or Upwork or anything. And had a Filipino putting ads out all over Craigslist to try to find these loan officers. And she was fantastic, doing great work for us all through.
She was just going to different Craigslists, sanfrancisco.craigslist.com, newyork.craigslist.com, et cetera, writing a different post for each one with enough of a change that it won't get caught by their spam blocking system. And then who would take all the calls that came in from those ads?
I forget. I think we would. It was either myself or Joe or whoever was in the office. It was another guy named Mark. And so we would take the calls and then we would kind of like, weed them out. So yeah, she would post. This is pre-ghosting, I think, too, in Craigslist. We're talking like 2005, 2006. Well, it turned out to where they would hide. You put up a Craigslist ad and it was not you or whatever, or it was a repeat or something similar. And you would think it's live and it's not live. Right. Oh. So that was something that happened way later. At this time, it wasn't a problem. This is like, like Airbnb later on, like put a ton of stuff on Craigslist, basically spam Craigslist to do some business. And shortly after that, like they got ghosted too. Everyone was getting ghosted later on.
I wonder if I've ever posted something on Craigslist, thought that it was posted and then it wasn't. I didn't even know ghosting was a thing.
Well, if you're not doing a lot of posts, I mean, it depends. I mean, how many couches are you selling, Andrew? Like how many things are you selling?
It was like one or two things that I did and not even that many posts, but I never got any responses. So maybe it was just a crappy ad, not that I was ghosted.
Yeah, maybe ghosted. I don't know. But so what we did is we realized that there was super value in this Philippines thing, right? Yep. And there was a time where like my business partner and I were cruising down the road and he was on like a Windows mobile phone, like chatting with our girl in the Philippines at like, 10 a.m. or something. He's chatting with her like on the freeway. And while I'm driving, and we're like, holy shit, like, man, this is the future. This is something that's going to be amazing. So our mortgage company ended up going out of business, but that Philippines connection came in handy later.
Later on, or soon after that, You ended up working for an SEO company, right?
Yes.
And then Joe joined you at the SEO company. You then went back to the guys who you were working for and saying, hey, look, we know about the whole Filipino VA system. Can we do something here? What did you propose to them?
So I think we'd already hired a couple of VAs to do some like just kind of like side tasks, and they were performing really well. It was successful. And I went to my boss at the time. It was like a part-time COO. He was in like 1 week and out another. And I said, look, I want to put this proposal together. So he kind of gave us some advice, and we sat down, went over it, put it on PowerPoint, and came in to our CEO, CFO, and said, look, here's what I want to propose. We set up a meet. They knew it was coming. And kind of like laid it out. Said, look, you know, we're not going to be firing our team. It was our team at the time. Most of operations worked for us. He said, we're not going to fire our team. We're going to let them go through attrition, right? As they leave, we'll let them go. But here's how much money we can save over time by replacing them with the Philippine staff. And they totally went for it. So we could have done that through the company, right? Just managed it, you know, remotely. But the idea was like, look, we can build this offshore company in the Philippines as our own. So eventually we can outsource our own jobs and join them in the Philippines and run a company from Asia.
And you guys were going to do this for them or start your own company of virtual assistants?
Start our own company.
Start your own company of virtual assistants, then go back to the SEO company and say, hire my company.
Well, just hire our company now and we will quit our jobs and start working.
Oh, I see. And did they do that?
They did. Signed a no-cut contract for like 2-year contract with them. Joe moved to the Philippines. We'd visited already to like set some stuff up. Joe moved to the Philippines. I stayed in the U.S. and, you know, continued to go into the office, even though I was just a contractor at that point.
Okay. So you're doing this, and then you say, hey, you know what? I want to go there too.
Yeah, I'm out of here. I don't want to be here. I'm not interested in, or I'm with a company that's not mine, that's not ours, and I want to get out. So my mentor was like, no, you should stay. You should find new clients in the U.S. You'd be much better off, and I just went anyway. So I left. And a few months later, they end up cutting our no-cut contract and cutting back on us, basically.
What's a no-cut contract?
Well, it was a deal where they couldn't cut our the amount of money they were paying per agent, or like they couldn't go below a certain amount of agents per month. If they did, they had to give us, you know, like plenty of notice and like a fee. So here's the problem. We were in a position where they owned us as like our only major client. It wasn't much of a business when, you know, all of your business is through them. Yeah. So we'd started hiring new customers, but like it wasn't enough to replace them fast enough. So when they say they're going to cut back on us, we have no leverage, zero leverage. A contract isn't leverage, right? So yes. Like, I mean, maybe it is, sure, if you want to get into this. But like at that point, like could we sue them? Maybe. But Andrew, they would have just cut us out completely and been like, you're done. And there goes 70% of all revenue we got coming in.
In fact, even if you sue them, your costs would be so high that whatever money you want back probably wouldn't be worth it if you want it back. And at the same time, you'd be so distracted that you wouldn't be in the virtual assistant business. You would be in the legal business.
Collect money business. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So,
that didn't work out. What happened? Well. So they cut back. Just cut like slowly but surely over time, and then finally cut everything. So we'd had enough clients at that point to kind of like still get by. We were making it, but not making it, right? Like we weren't doing super well. It was like, okay, it's survival mode. Like we're getting by.
This is the second time that you're in this big low as entrepreneurs. The first time at the mortgage business. I don't want to overlook the fact that you leave the mortgage business or you have to close out the mortgage business. What happened to you?
I was broke. Looked for a job on Craigslist. I was like, this seems like kind of a cool company. Applied for them. It was good. I was actually an interesting company, but I was just broke.
And you were top of the world in the mortgage business. You were actually bringing money in, having clients. What was the big thing that indicated to you in your head that you'd made it in the mortgage business?
We took a month-long vacation to Asia and traveled all around Asia, like, you know, toward the Christmas break or whatever. It's fine. Had plenty of money.
Yeah.
No problem. So could leave the business.
And then you lose the business and your friend gets married and suddenly what happens at the bachelor party?
Yeah. I can't pay for my portion of the bachelor party. It's horribly, horribly embarrassing. Yeah. So
awful. And then now again, this new virtual assistant business is coming to a crash. How did, what happened there at that crash? How did you personally handle it?
So it sucked that we weren't in a great financial position. but it got worse. Like we had an office, right? So we had an office in the Philippines that we go into regularly. And it got to the point where like Joe, my business partner, was like, look, let's just close the office. It doesn't make sense. And it's fine for him. Like it wasn't that big of a deal, but it's like a real pain point for me. I was like, if we close the office, we don't have a real business. Like we don't have a real business and we might as well, we're probably going to be stuck quitting and going home to the US. We're screwed. So, you know, but it made sense. We fought about that. And eventually I agreed, okay, let's shut down the office. But it was pretty painful to the point of like, I thought we were done.
And at that point, if you were done, what did that mean for you? Did it mean going back to a job? Did it mean your life was over? I was in a tough spot, it meant I'm never going to find a girlfriend. Forget it. Never. Like I can't even get air to breathe, let alone find love.
Yeah. What was it for you? I thought I would have to get a job. I think my life was over, and I didn't because of the mortgage thing. Like that was pretty horrible. But you know, it's like that showed me that no matter how bad business gets, like you'll make it through.
Oh,
like,
I see that. Because you got over the mortgage business, this next hit was not so bad. You said, I'll get over this too.
I was a lot less afraid of failure. It still sucked, but I was a lot less afraid of failure. And I still had a storage unit worth of apartments worth of stuff in the U.S. And I figured if I got to go back, I'll pull the stuff out of storage and get an apartment and go try to figure it out. So it wasn't great, but I would have hated to have to go back to the U.S. and get a job, and that sound would have been horrible. But it was close to that, yeah.
One of the hard parts about having put together a team is, and I've been in situations like this, I look around and I go, these people are freaking terrific. They're brilliant. They're great people. I'm lucky to get to work with them. It's hard to assemble a team like this. And now the company's going down. I could lose them all. And it's not because they're all failures. And I've let people go saying this. You're not the problem. I fucked up. I'm the one who screwed up. That's the worst feeling, right? You're letting people go. You're losing this big thing that you put together because of a screw up that you made.
Yeah, you feel like you're letting people down. You feel like you're screwing them over. And the worst thing is like they think they're just horrible. Like, right. They totally blame themselves.
And then they have to go back to their wives who might think that they're horrible, or their husbands who now have to readjust their lives because of what you – that's an awful feeling. You had that. What did you end up doing with this team of people?
So we did let some people go. We had to, right? So we let some people go, but we kept others. And, you know, these were the best and brightest, and they've been with us for years at that point. And we said, look, there's got to be something we can do with them. We tried a couple of different things. We tried, like, Mechanical Turk and a few other things.
You mean passing them to Mechanical Turk so they do some work on Mechanical Turk?
Yeah, and they were making, like, you know, 80 cents an hour or something. Like, just nothing good. And one of the other things we tried was building niche websites. So something around a particular small keyword that would rank organically and get paid via AdSense, right? It makes a couple bucks a day. We're good. And so we started doing that, and we spent a few thousand dollars and a whole bunch of my time, Joe's time, and our agent's time, and you know, made like, I don't know, $50 and then $100 next month, a couple $100 next month. And it was really not going well until maybe the fourth or fifth month, and it started making a bit more money. And I was disappointed with it. And Joe's like, oh, we're just beginning, because he saw the recurring like start to kick in. And I was like, oh, we're screwed.
What was the website that you guys built that was earning AdSense?
Here's a good one. It's so long, it's gone. I'm sure constipatedcat.net was one of them. So
constipatedcat.what?
.net.
Okay.
It's probably not even there now, but there's a lot of cat owners out there that are really worried about their constipated cats, apparently.
And so your virtual assistants in the Philippines ended up the site is down. I'm actually going to go to Internet Archive to see if I can find it. Your virtual assistants in the Philippines put together that website for you with what kind of content?
Outsourced content from, I think, like Text Broker and HireWriters.com or HireWriter.com, a couple of different companies out there that provide text. So they would order the text from there. They wouldn't actually do the writing. They would order the text and then publish it on the sites. In some instances, we actually had Filipino staff ordering content from the U.S. So we had our Filipino team outsourcing to the U.S., which I thought was cute. They would have U.S. writers writing for the sites. And it got to the point where we were doing a lot of these. And some of them would fail and wouldn't make money. Others would, right? So we'd have one that makes $1,200 a month. And, you know, a bunch of others make $350 a month, right? And so the ones that were making good money were winners. And the ones that were not, that may be mid-range, were making $50, $80, $100 a month.
It looks like the business was called trybpo.com.
That was our outsourcing company.
Yeah. That was your outsourcing company. Got it. Okay.
And Try so BPO, BP, business process outsourcing. Yeah.
Ah, I see. Okay. Yeah. And this is the thing that then turned everything around, because you guys started building these websites, as we'll see in a moment. You started selling them, and then that led to a site where anyone can buy and sell their own websites, right?
Yes. So we built up like kind of a buy side to the market, and we started off selling on Flippa.
Let me take a pause before we get into the next stage in the story. Yeah. I want to understand how you then developed into a marketplace. And I'm also so scared of marketplaces, because you have to get two groups of people together and you only make a small commission on the overall sale that you're generating. But at the same time, I'm seeing through my interviews that these marketplaces are phenomenal. And when I asked you what would you create, you didn't say, Andrew, I'd create something completely different because it's a tough business. You said, you know what? If I could create anything, it would be another marketplace. So let me take a moment to talk about how you built this marketplace and how anyone else could build a marketplace based on what you've learned. But first, I got to tell people about a company called PipeDrive. Dude, Justin, I've been telling people about PipeDrive for years. Frankly, they don't need to pay me for me to talk about it. I have, if you go back to the transcripts, you'll see PipeDrive being mentioned for years. And the reason is this. Are you a driven person?
Yes.
I'm super driven. I hate when someone shows me their CRM, and people love their CRM because it does something cute, like keep track of whether someone opened up your email or not. I love that. Those things are cute. But I'm so driven that if I have a CRM, if I have some place where I could put people's contact information, I want to know, what am I driving towards? What's the goal of this? And what PipeDrive does is it takes my energy, my need to drive a conversation, a relationship towards a goal, and lays it out in a way that allows me to actually hit that goal and maybe brings in a team of people to help me. Here's what they do. They say, what's your ultimate goal? Is it a sale? And in most cases, of course, it is. For me, it's getting a guest here on Mixergy. Great. They say, that is now your finish line. Put that into PipeDrive. They say, what are the steps involved in getting to that goal? I lay them out. Boom, ba 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 ba. Every step has its own column. Every time I add someone now to my PipeDrive, they get a card that goes in the very first column. And my goal as a human being, as a business owner, is to drive as many of those cards from the first column to the end column, meaning I hit the goal with them. For me, the goal is to get you here on Mixergy. You originated as a card on column number one of my PipeDrive. Column number one for me is suggest a guest.
Is it marketing automation or CRM or kind of a hybrid?
It's CRM. It's a way for a team of people to see, or even an individual, to get someone to close a sale. Sorry, it's a way for, it's software that helps you close sales. So you are a card on the leftmost column, which is suggest a guest. I have someone else on the team say, is Justin Cook really appropriate for Mixergy? Someone else said, yeah, he is. Moved you to the right. Then we did a pre-interview, which means we move you another column, and so on. Right? If at any point you lose touch with us, which sometimes happens, people have other things going on in their business, your card turns red. It means Justin hasn't spoken to us. He's ignoring us. Someone else goes in and makes sure that you're given enough love and attention that you come back in our system so you do the interview.
You can set up automations to like remind people, oh, this guy hasn't checked in for a
right.
bit.
Right. Yes. Yeah. If we as a team haven't checked in, your card goes red. If you haven't checked in with us, your card goes red, because we know that if we haven't had any communication in a while, we're much less likely to close you as a guest on Mixergy.
That makes sense.
Right. And if Andrea sends you an email, I get to see it so that I know what other people on my team have said to my guests.
Sneaky, Andrew. Sneaky.
It's fantastic. I'm revealing the whole thing. Anyone out there who wants to close a sale has got to try PipeDrive. If you're doing it by yourself, it'll hold you accountable to make sure that you're really adding as many new people to your system as possible, as many new sales calls as you say that you're going to, or as many sales emails as you say you're going to. And it tells you, where are you failing? Where are you not closing your sales? If you bring in a team of people, you all collaborate to close sales. All right, the best way to see this is to go to PipeDrive and try it out. I've been talking about it for years, and when I did, nobody got anything for free. You had to actually be just like everyone else. Now that they're paying me for these ads, they're giving us something free, 2 free months of PipeDrive for anyone who's listening to me. The offer is still available for a limited time. Go check out pipedrive.com/Mixergy, pipedrive.com/Mixergy. You'll get this tool that's very hard for me apparently to explain here that will help you close your sales in a very easy way. I'm telling you, it's fantastic. Pipedrive.com/Mixergy. I haven't gotten a single complaint about PipeDrive. Right? Any other sponsor, people will tell me, hey, you know what? It doesn't work for me. I actually like it, but it's not a good fit. PipeDrive, no one's ever said, actually, this sucks, Andrew. Not a single person.
Not bad.
No. Frankly, if anyone doesn't like any one of my sponsors, email me. I want to know directly. If you don't like Pipedrive, if you think I'm overselling it, my email address is andrew@mixergy.com. andrew@mixergy.com. And if you love it, I'd love it if you tell me about that too. All right. You start selling on Flippa. You guys were called AdSense Flippers. That was your name?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. You're starting to make money. Is this actually generating sales?
Yeah. So we... you know, we could have just kept building the sites without selling the websites on Flippa. We started selling because we wanted to recoup some of our cash outlay. I think we spent like 10 grand or something. So we said, look, let's bring some of that money back by selling the sites and then just reinvest that into building more, scaling up the process. And so that was really helpful. Made some money on selling those sites and then just kind of like incubated the sites, grew them out, and the ones that popped that made money, we'd sell. And so we started selling on Flippa, and then we had a bunch of people, buyers, that asked us, look, I like buying from you guys, but the problem is that you're starting to get popular, and so you're starting to get all these copycats. So when I buy a site, there's a dozen copycats. Can you just sell it to us privately before, like, don't take it to Flippa. Hell, don't even put the URL out there. Just tell me you've got a site, how much it makes, and I'll buy it from you. And we're like, that's really strange, but we'll do it. I mean, that makes sense, right? Like,
it makes sense because all the sites are essentially the same. It's not like you suddenly were offering a Shopify store one week and another WordPress site. It's all WordPress sites. It's all content-based. It's all AdSense-based.
Very straightforward. So we started selling those privately on our site, and we put up a – you can do way back on this. It looks ridiculous, but there's like a like an Excel spreadsheet with like a button you can click and buy now. It's really bad.
And I would see that on AdSenseFlippers.com.
Yeah.
AdSenseFlippers.com.
Yeah. And there was on our marketplace, and you could go and you click a button and it would take you to a PayPal link. You would go buy the site from us and we would do the transfer for you. So yeah, that's how we started building up kind of the buy side. And you talked about marketplace difficult because there's two sides to it. This was our cheat, was that we were creating our own inventory and selling it, right? So we were you know, could create our own inventory, we could scale up or down as needed. And so we started building up buy side. And so we got a lot of people asking us, hey, can I sell with you? You have a ton of buyers.
Wait, before you did that, how did you get buyers? What was it that you were doing?
Content marketing. So we were explaining to people exactly how we built the sites. And so we were, I think, building some, and like we said, step by step, this is exactly what we do. This is our keyword research process, this is our process for building them out. This is exactly what we do. And so we were attracting some attention with that. And so it just got some people kind of in our space.
And we had an income report going all the way back to, I think, 2011.
Yeah, yeah. So they weren't that popular back then, but, you know, enough to, like, get some attention. And so, you know, we had our buyers from Flippa previously that had bought from us and, like, had followed us and joined our email list. So, you know, as we were putting more sites up, we had more and more buyers for sale to attract new buyers and with our content marketing. So that's how we built up the buy side. And then sellers knew about it because they knew us from Flippa or knew us from our content marketing and said, hey, can I sell with you? And we kept saying no. And the same reason you mentioned earlier, Andrew, is like, why would I take a crappy margin on this like transactional business when I can basically create my own inventory, right? I can just, you know, whenever I want. I own the factory, right?
Right.
And so that's great when you're got a great ROI on your products. Right. When you don't, or when that slips significantly, the transactional business seems much more interesting. So basically, the sites we were building weren't nearly as successful. They just weren't as successful. So we build it for, like, say, $50, and we were selling for $200, then maybe like a year down the road, we were selling for like $60 to $80. Right. And so it's just not nearly as profitable. And so we started looking back at the letting other people sell, and we said, look, it looks a lot more interesting. So what we did is we said, look, we're only selling like four-figure websites. Why don't we broker like five-figure websites? So then they're not directly.
Let me just say this, that I'm looking at old screenshots of your site. It's not unusual to see a site going for $500.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We're really talking small amounts of money. They were making $26 a month. Sales. That's the kind of thing that we're talking about.
Yeah, super small.
Super small. Okay.
What we would do, what we did on Flippa and then a bit on our site, is we package them together. So if we have like a $25 a month earner, we'd package it with like five others, right? Okay. So we get $125. Or if we had, you know, $500 earners, package them together to a $500 earner, whatever we thought like would sell better and like give us a kind of a bigger bang for our buck. So we were doing a lot of those, and we said, like, why don't we broker deals that are like in the five-figure range? So they're not competing directly with us. Why let people sell with us, and they're competing with our factory? Why not get them at a different like level? Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Because I don't want them competing with us, because then they buy their sites and not ours, and we're making a hell of a lot of money on the deal.
So you guys handle the small deals by yourselves by making these sites and selling the smaller sites. But if someone wants to make and sell a bigger site, that's okay. They just can't compete in your $500 space.
That's right. And then, you know, we ultimately let some people do that. And over time, and this is maybe like we were doing other things in the meantime, and over time there was like a transition that happened where the brokerage continued to do better and the sites we were making weren't nearly as profitable. And so we cut making sites completely. We took hits too, like on Google updates and other things along the way. And so finally we said, look, why don't we just continue the brokerage? That seems to be the thing that's working well. And at one point, maybe a year later, 2013 or so, we cut out everything else. So we had like keyword research packages and like other products and services, and we just got rid of everything and said, look, the brokerage is what we want to focus on. And it worked out really well for us. Let us focus in on just doing the brokerage, and it did really well.
Your writing got you traffic. Your guest posts on other sites helped get you traffic. Your podcast, did that help get traffic?
I don't know. And to be honest with you, I don't know. Traffic, I don't know if it got us new customers. I know that it like strengthened relationships with customers. So I don't know how many new customers it drove. But like it definitely there's a thing where if we're getting on the phone, or one of our sales guys today is getting on the phone with someone who's listened to our podcast and is familiar with us, it's not like we have to like, you know, sell them on who we are and like why you should trust us. They already know, like, and trust us. It's really a matter of like finding the right website for what they're looking for. Like, here's kind of where my budget is. Here's what my risk tolerance is. Here's kind of, you know, what my skill set is. What do you think is a good fit? And, you know, it's a lot easier than like, who are you guys? I don't know if I want to pay a deposit. Like, what is this crazy deposit process you got? You know, how do I know these sites are any good? All those kinds of things.
I see also that, where is that? I can't get similar web up. My computer is slow for some reason. Where are you in the world?
Right now I'm in Saigon or Ho Chi Minh City, Vietnam.
And you're a guy who traveled a lot. You're just now settling into Saigon. I wonder, when you're doing all this traveling, how do you get work done? How do you find high speed internet that you can count on in all these places?
Well, it's not like all tiki huts out here, man. Like, we, you know, there's.
I'm in San Francisco. It feels like tiki huts. My internet sometimes is so freaking slow. Like right now, I was trying to find my list of stuff about you, my list of referral links.
I don't know, man. It's like 40 down.
What do you do to find high-speed internet when you go to these different countries?
40 down, 30 up here in Saigon. I mean, there's Wi-Fi at most of the coffee shops. It's pretty fast. It's reasonably fast. I mean, there are service apartments all over Bangkok, Manila, Saigon. If you're staying in major cities, just don't go to Bali or some of the island places. If you're in major cities over here, the internet's super fast and plenty of cafes to work from if you need to do calls. I mean, I have a nice apartment here. I mean, it's pretty easy, man. You've never been out here, right? To any of the conferences or anything? You should come sometime.
No, I haven't. But you're right, Bali. I did have internet trouble there. I was just traveling through it for a while, and it's tough. But I remember actually moving to DC. My internet was so slow. I would actually show them, look, here are the countries I've gone to. Internet is better in these freaking countries. Make it work. Just find a way to solve it. I had to pay extra just to have, like, I think it was $150 a month just to have my own internet brought into an office that came with internet already.
Yeah, it's horrible. Yeah, I think we're paying like $40. So, you know, we were able to operate online pretty easily. And our whole, you know, management team does this, where most of us are traveling and we get together every few months, like every 3 or 4 months, we'll bring our whole team together to work for a month. And we'll do it in random places, Chiang Mai, Thailand, or Saigon, Vietnam, or we've done it in, you know, Phuket, Thailand.
How do you afford to do that when you guys are bringing $700,000 a year, $200,000 of that goes roughly to sales to you guys. How much are you paying to fly all these people into the same room?
Well, it's pretty cheap over here, man. I mean, and the other thing is we grew a lot. We're going to do maybe 10 or 11 million this year.
Okay.
So in sales. So we, again,
we're basically saying closing 2016 in not including values of the sites that you're selling, $10 or $11 million.
No. Value of the sites we're selling, total sales. Total sales.
Including the value of the sites. What about excluding the value of the sites?
Probably 1.5.
Okay. All right. So then what does it cost you to fly your whole team to get together?
Not that much. I mean, right. We just brought on 3 new salespeople. So it costs a bit more. We budget maybe 15 to 18 grand for the month and usually end up spending maybe 20, 18 to 20.
18 to 20 to fly your whole team to get together.
To rent out the places and the penthouses. That's
worth it for you?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, look at our Facebook page, Andrew. Look at the places we get to stay. So, it's an awesome thing. So, we get to stay in these crazy villas on, like, the beaches in Thailand with super fast internet and work and play together for a month. Totally worth it to us.
Yeah, I've seen that. All right.
And it's like, not, you know, like, it is, people are like, well, you guys are doing this kind of, like, beachy villa penthouse thing. Yeah. Yeah, because it's awesome. It is. Unabashedly... I feel great about it. It's great. So when we get to bring our whole team together in terms of like team culture and having everyone together, I love it. And our team loves it too.
I wonder if I should be doing more of that. I definitely don't get together with my team enough. And the Buffer guys, we've never seen everyone.
They did it in Thailand. I think they were doing it like once every 6 months or something. And mm-hmm. they did one in Thailand where they rented a villa and did a little bit of work, a little bit of play. Ours is more work. And keep in mind, Andrew, that we're doing this all the time anyway. Most other people on our team are doing the travel thing. So they're staying 1 month here, 2 months there. So we just kind of like round everyone up and say, hey, in April, we're going to be in Saigon. So we're bringing them back here. And yeah. You know.
As long as they're traveling, they might as well travel to the same city that the rest of the team is in and just hang out and work together.
That's right.
You guys used to have a pretty high failure rate, as you called it, when you talked to our producer, which means you told her 30%. 30% means what?
I don't know.
here's what I got. We were building these sites. It wasn't successful. We were getting a big failure rate in the beginning. Oh, I see. I thought it was 30% of the sites didn't sell.
No, that's back when we were building our own sites. So we had maybe 30% of our sites that we built would do well, and like a bunch wouldn't. And it got even worse over time to the point where that's what I was saying. Like, we get a great return on the sites we were building, and then that kind of whittled down and got worse and worse. So ultimately, the sites we were building ourselves just weren't as high ROI, and it just made more sense to broker other people's deals.
I see. Okay. So let's talk about the marketplace.
Our process for building sites just wasn't as good as it was previously. And other people had better ways to build businesses.
I'm seeing these marketplaces, they seem to do really well. Most people don't do the kind of work you do. They don't want to touch the money between the client and the customer, especially not to your degree. They just want to match people up and get a cut of the revenue. It seems like a tough business to be in. Can you talk first about the difficulty of creating a marketplace, and then we'll talk about what you can do to make it work well?
Yeah, I'd say the biggest difficulty in creating a marketplace is, you know, the chicken and egg problem, right? Like, which side do you go after? And it's kind of interesting. When you think about our marketplace, the sellers are really what you need. If you have the sellers, the buyers will come. So with us and our competitors, like, it's always we're always kind of like racing to get new listings, right? And that's what we're doing. And so not only are we trying to get the new listings, but you want to have a high quality of listing. Because if we took every listing that came across, right, the quality of our marketplace would be lower and buyers wouldn't trust our marketplace. So they have a vetting process. So we have to do the kind of the Chinese wall, where you have sales out there shopping for deal flow. And then you have now me and the operational side saying, okay, this isn't good enough, this isn't meet our quality guidelines. So it's interesting. It's a battle, actually.
I'm taking some notes as you're talking because I want to ask follow-up questions. It's kind of weird when I type as you're talking. It feels like I'm not paying attention, but in fact, I'm actually paying attention. Here's what I wrote down. I'm wondering why you need more sellers than buyers. If I were just to look at this space as an outsider and try to predict which side you'd want, my hunch would have been, if you have a lot of buyers, the sellers are naturally going to come because they want a crowd of people to potentially buy. Why is it that sellers then draw buyers more than the other way around?
It's a really growing industry. So there's a lot more people that are looking to buy businesses, online businesses. And so there's less people that have taken the time to actually build them out and more people looking to get in. So as the industry continues to grow, I would imagine the buyers would continue to be more and more buyers that are looking to get into this. One of the really interesting spaces, I just talked to a guy recently, is trying to help baby boomers look at online businesses, right? Not someone who has like zero internet skills, but someone that's somewhat savvy that could possibly run an online business. And how do you get them from that to actually being able to do it? And I think that's a really interesting niche to be in right now.
When you do have these sellers, how do you get the buyers to know that you have them?
Well, we have, I mean, a lot of us share buyers. So whether it's Flippa, other brokers, us, we have a lot of the same buyers.
You mean there are people who just do a lot of site buying?
Yes. Oh yeah, there's people with hundreds of properties earning anything from like $1,000 to $10,000 a month, and they've got hundreds of them.
How do they manage these guys?
Huge teams. They have multiple partners. They have investors. They have multiple operational teams.
I see, and all they do is they buy these websites, content mostly.
No, they do e-commerce, do FBA businesses. Depends on the kind of like what they're looking for and what their portfolio needs.
What's an FBA business? For sale by Amazon?
Fulfilled by Amazon. So it's like they're shipping from China to the Amazon store and shipping out from there.
And there's not much action that happens on their website?
Yeah, very little. It's all sold through Amazon.
And that's also sold on your site?
We sell FBA businesses. They're pretty new. So we had our first listing for Amazon in December 2015. And then we've sold more than a dozen of them already this year. Maybe 12 to 15 probably this year, Amazon FBA businesses alone.
That's amazing. So the whole business happens on Amazon, and that's what people are selling. They're selling all the old reviews. They're selling the connection to the place in China that makes it.
Yeah, people don't care. It's not like you're buying a website or the content, right? You're buying the cash flow. You're buying the brand. It's a lot of goodwill. So that's really what people are buying, right? Mm-hmm. So when they're doing their due diligence and they're doing their vetting, the question is number one, how likely is it that those earnings are going to continue? And number two, what's my real opportunity to take this over and grow it, right? So that's what buyers are ultimately looking for.
If I were to buy a website, I've never bought a website before. What's an easy one for me to buy to get started?
It's going to depend on your skill set, Andrew. So
let's say content. That's what I've been doing.
Something that is particularly interesting to you, something that you, with your current team, your team at Mixergy, you could leverage their skill sets and like add into the mix pretty easily. So you've got people that vet the guests, right? You've got someone that like vets, like guest posts or something might be interesting. Like you'd add them to that vets, but particular guests for the blog interviews or something. So something that fits your team skill sets, your personal skill sets would be ideal. Something that's in your budget. Obviously, I think it's generally better to buy a larger site rather than buy a bunch of smaller sites. I've changed on that over the years. That's my, I'm leaning more towards the larger site rather than multiple small sites because of split focus issues. But that's generally what we'd look for.
What if I wanted to get out of the content space? Or not get out, but I wanted to diversify away from the content space. Knowing my audience, what's one type of business I could buy from you guys at Empire Flippers that would fit with my audience and allow me to diversify away from ads and content?
Do you like physical products?
Sure, if it fits.
Good e-commerce business?
Good e-commerce. Maybe, you have one listed right now on your site that I can look at?
I don't know, Andrew. I'm not the listing guy. I actually don't know.
What are you? What's your focus in the company?
More marketing, and I just recently took over operations and customer service. So I took that back from Joe. Joe is running sales mostly, and we just hired three new people to be on our sales team. So with his hiring them, I just recently took customer service back from Joe.
So I'm looking at...
But marketing. I'm mostly marketing.
Mostly marketing. That's why you're doing the interview, not Joe.
Yeah. He's good though. He can do an interview. It's all right.
I'm looking at it. Yeah. You guys are good personalities. And it seems like from the start, you were big about showing your photo, showing your on your website, talking about who you were, telling your story. I saw one post that you did 2011, I think it was, where you said, here's how little money we made from AdSense, $43. Ouch. Right. Like you're big about saying, here's where we're not happy. This is where we're not doing well. And I think that helps personalize you and it makes you more interesting as guests too for me. Interesting. So there's not – you wouldn't be able to recommend – what about someone listening to me who says, you know what? I've never bought a website. I keep thinking about how I can start another business. I just want to get started by testing and buying a site. There are a whole bunch of issues when you buy someone else's product that you don't know about if you're doing it for the first time. What's one that they could go – what's the type of site that you'd recommend they went and bought?
So I mean, for first-timers, I really like Amazon Affiliate and like Lead Gen. So for the last couple of years, there's been a lot of sites in the Lead Gen space. And generally, this is like in the educational space. There are companies like QuinStreet that have networks of paid for educational institutions that are looking for leads to send to them. And if you have a site in that space, let's say some kind of medical education, right? Some technical job. They'll pay you for those leads. People are looking for those tech schools. So set up a lead gen site with them. They'll pay you $30, $40 a lead. And then some of those sites make $2,000, $3,000, $5,000 a month. I think those are super interesting. I think the content's kind of interesting. I think Amazon affiliate sites are pretty straightforward. So they're making normally, you know, anything from $500 a month, $1,000 a month, up to $15,000, $20,000.
Meaning they've got a content site that then links to Amazon affiliate products.
Yeah, links to products on Amazon. We'll do like a lot of reviews. It'll do like a this versus that product. And generally, if you're going to buy those, I like the higher quality content where they have like real quality images. Those are generally better. So Amazon affiliate sites are easy. I say lead gen sites are easy if you're just starting off. Like a full-on e-commerce business is a lot more complicated where you're actually warehousing the product. If you really want a physical product business, I'd say FBA is easier, where you're shipping directly to Amazon. They're shipping out for you. You don't have to worry about sales channels. Now you have to worry about how to stay relevant and on top of the search engine in Amazon, which is another challenge. But, I mean, for a physical product space, FBA is pretty easy.
I see. All right. And as a marketplace, if someone's listening and wants to build up a marketplace, what advice would you give them based on your experience?
Good luck.
Good luck.
One of the things we did is we didn't worry so much about the tech. So we didn't have like a whole bunch of development going on the back end.
You guys were just WordPress website. You guys didn't even have smart URLs or Google friendly URLs. It was like P=115 is the URL, is the end of the URL.
Oh, maybe super early. I don't know. Maybe like 5 years ago.
I might be looking at really old versions.
But yeah, it was still super ugly and not particularly pretty. We cleaned that up. So what we did is we ultimately made like the kind of front end cleaner, but not very sophisticated on the back end. And that was a way to kind of like hack it, where we didn't want to pay for all the development work, want to make it pretty on the front. And now, even like last year and this year, we're doing a lot of like catch up work to like clean it up on the back end. But you can do that, have like a nice, prettier front end, and then clean it up later on. That's one of the things we did to make our marketplace better.
Did you guys create the marketplace software yourself?
When we originally did it, yeah, we were selling our own sites.
What about now? I mean, I guess in the beginning it was a WordPress website. Now, what is it? No, you guys are still running on it's still WordPress.
Yep.
Just your own custom theme. It's because I see people need to create listings through you. You don't need a site that allows them to create a listing and then have it powered and up online fast.
So we have, it's a pretty, when we tell developers, when we hired our latest developer team, whatever, we said that we work on WordPress, and they're like, oh, WordPress is boring. We're like, no, it's actually kind of interesting. So they looked at it and they're like, okay, it's a little more complicated. It's kind of interesting. So yeah, but it's straight WordPress.
I see what I mean about the URL. It's not that in the past your URLs were numbers. It's today. Every listing of a URL is a number. Like the URL for this one that I'm looking at is empireflippers.com/listing/40701.
Yeah.
That's it. Okay. Instead of the name, I guess you couldn't put the name of the site in there.
No, not helpful.
You'll only tell it to people who put down a deposit.
That's right.
All right. Well, you did it. You feel safe now, or do you still feel the sense of at some point this whole business could go away because two of my past ones went away?
Well, yeah. There was a point at which I crossed over and I realized I'll never have to go get a job. Like, no shit. I'm not going to have to go get a job again. And so that's helpful. Now it's a question of are we going to screw up and make less? I'm fine. I'll be fine either way. I'll get out of this. I'll do something else. I'm totally comfortable with that. But do we screw our employees? Do we overhire and have to let people go because we screwed up? Right. We're growing really quickly. Like I said, from 2015 to 2016, we doubled. We're looking to double again in 2017. Do we overhire or underhire for that? Do we leave our staff screwed? Right. So those are the questions I'm wondering now. And that it's tough, man. Either way, it's tough, right? So do I worry about that shit? Yeah, I worry about it all the time.
One of the people you hired is a guy who introduced us, Alex Champagne. He was a producer at Mixer G, helped us find guests, among other things. And as soon as he went to work with you guys, he, I guess, emailed us and said, dude, you have to find out about Empire Flippers. And that's how we connected.
Yeah.
And you know what? And before I did this interview, I didn't check to see how I met you because I didn't want that to keep me from researching you heavily. Like if I knew it was Alex, I wouldn't have been as aggressive in my research. I would have said, all right, let's just go light. It's a friend of a friend. How did you feel about that intro? I mean, the first 20 minutes of this interview where I was hitting you with kind of hard questions.
It's aggressive, man. Well, the other thing is, too, I felt like you took too much from competitors that don't necessarily like our position in the market or the fact that we're taking market share from them. So it felt a little bit like you were taking too much of their talking points and bringing them up, which, I mean, it's fine. It's reasonable. But it's not. I don't think that's ever viewed by our customers. I don't think it's viewed by or how we're viewed by potential customers, which is a little. It's a little different. Like the industry is not happy with us because we do things super, like really differently. So because we do things so differently, industry people aren't fans. Now customers or potential customers that are leaving them and coming to us, they're fans. That make sense?
That is a fair point. It's true that I couldn't figure out who your customers were to go call them up. I was checking to see if I knew someone who was a customer of yours, but I could talk to people who'd been in this space and as a result knew you guys. And that's absolutely true. And that's fair feedback. All right. Well, the website has been vetted by me in a very aggressive way. And I'm proud to say that we did this interview and that you're up on the site. You feel at the end of it, does it feel overall like a fair interview though?
Yeah, man, it's fair. I'm a fan of yours, Andrew. I know you ask tough questions. I know you like to dig, man. You didn't ask me any like really weird questions. That's the
like what you used to hear me ask weird questions as a listener. What'd you hear me say?
I don't know. What have I heard? I have to go back. I don't know, man. You've asked some weird ones though. Like, did you ever feel about killing yourself? Or have you ever thought about like basic questions? Like, what are you doing, dude? What are you doing?
I get that. Yeah. Did you ever feel about killing?
No, never did. No, I never thought about killing. Not seriously.
Not in relation to business.
No, yeah, no.
Okay. All right. It's empireflippers.com for anyone who wants to go check it out. And of course, the two sponsors that I had, one I did I think a good job for. The other one, I don't think I was clear enough on. In fact, one of the reasons why I like having a guest on while I do the ads is I could tell when I'm not very clear. So the one that I think I did a good job on was TopTal. TopTal.com/Mixergy. The one that I feel I didn't do such a great job on was Pipedrive. Fair to say?
Yep.
Yeah, it was a little confusing how Pipedrive is going to help you grow your sales, which is why at the end I said you better go check it out if you really want to understand it. But that's not what they paid me for. They want me to explain what it does, not to offload it back to them. All right. It is Pipedrive.com/Mixergy and TopTal.com/Mixergy if you want to check out my two sponsors. And I'm grateful to them and I'm grateful to you for doing this. Thanks, Justin.
Thanks, man.
Bye, everyone.